Hello, beautiful people. What is up? It's Scott. Welcome back to Verbal Shenanigans. I hope you guys had a wonderful holiday and Black Friday. You got 30% off the blender that you really wanted, but welcome back to the show. We have an awesome guest for you today, but I want to tell you about some of the sponsors that make this podcast possible. One of them happens to be Manskirt Brewing. Manskirt Brewing is located in Hackettstown, New Jersey, right in the old bank building. Manskirt Brewing always has seasonally inspired ales, a beautiful place to hang out, have a beer, play some games, listen to some tunes. Just an awesome brewery in New Jersey. So go check out Joe in his Manskirt. Check out their gear, glasses, and go get a growler of beer. That is Manskirt Brewing. Now, are you tired of waking up in back pain? 50% of Americans are. Sleep Ovation's new mattress is 700 tiny mattresses that individually cradle natural curves of your spine. This provides perfect comfort and spine support for back pain relief and the best goddamn sleep of your life. Pre-order yours now at sleepovation.com. If you use the show code VERBAL, you get $100 off your order. I've checked out the Sleep Ovation mattresses. They are awesome. It's like 700 little cushiony things cradling each little member of your spine. It's fantastic. Go check out Sleep Ovation. Now, Adirondack Pub and Brewery, located in Lake George, New York. Their Sunday brunch series is coming to an end this Sunday. To celebrate the success of the series, the brewery is offering a free beer with the purchase of any brunch item. If you haven't checked out the awesome brunch menu, be sure to do so this Sunday, 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Now on tap, their Imperial Red Ale. What happens when we brew a high-octane red ale and excessively dry hop it with Crystal and Eureka hops? Eureka! We've created one smooth beer with bold notes of pine and citrus, pouring a beautiful ruby color with a dense off-white head. This beer is an annual favorite of ours. Be sure to be on the lookout for Adirondack Brewery's 2018 beer release calendar to be announced soon. To keep up with the brewery, check them out on Facebook or Instagram at Adirondack Brewery, one of my favorite breweries to visit and just to be associated with. Now, Demented Brewing. Demented Brewing happens to be another brewery that we work closely with here on the Verbal Shenanigans podcast, and they are located in Middlesex, New Jersey. One of the coolest tap rooms in all of New Jersey. 16 rotating handles, something different every Sunday. They just released Vogon, their all-new Galaxy IPA, and then this Sunday they're going to be releasing Wrath, which is their Russian Imperial Stout, which is one of my favorites of theirs. So go check out Demented Brewing. Just one of the best breweries in New Jersey, up and coming, about 2 years old. Fantastic stuff over there. Now, Susan Robb was one of our sponsors, along with Paul Templer, the Hippo Guy, and Kim Ward, another guest on our show. And listen, they launched the Nepal Outreach Program, and they really need donations. Kim Ward is the executive director of the Templer Foundation, a not-for-profit 501c3. And they launched a GoFundMe page under the name the Paul Outreach Program. So basically, they're trying to help women and children who are enrolled and raise $3,500 toward tuition and supply women with materials and tools to help them sustain the sewing program the Templar Foundation helped them start. So it's just a really good cause. They're looking for any donation, no matter how big, no small. Check out the Paul Outreach Program on their GoFundMe page. It is well worth it. Finally, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Trivia Revolution is a trivia company that we host trivia all over in New Jersey in craft beer bars and breweries. Trivia Revolution is just a really fun night out with your friends. You can be in last place, win prizes to breweries, so go check it out. Come check me out on Wednesdays at Tap House 15. Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. All right, very special podcast for you today. If you are a Red Sox fan, possibly a Mets fan or Angels fan, or just a baseball fan in general, the one and only Mo Vaughn comes and joins us. We talk a lot of baseball. We talk about a lot about his business ventures, his charity, just a really awesome, down-to-earth, funny guy. So here it is, Mo Vaughn. Enjoy the podcast.
Hey, this is Mo Vaughn. How you guys doing? We're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
Our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Even shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Thank you. again.
Back in the saddle. I think Podbean is down.
Oh.
Try going to Podbean.
All right. Give me a sec.
Which is great because that's where all our content is. So.
Well, I guess it's all our viewers just rushing. They're like, oh, my God, I came back for that big Thanksgiving weekend. Got to catch up with Verbal Shenanigans.
We shut down another webpage.
Yeah.
No, I'm not getting Podbean right now. I have to tweet at them.
The last time was IRS.gov. It was a weird story.
Yeah.
We'll get into it another day.
But we are back. We are back again with episode, I don't even know, 177, something like that.
76 or 77, one of them.
But right climbing there. Our way to 200. I saw... today on Facebook, like one of those memory things popped up. And 2 years ago, we interviewed Captain Bayonne. That was 2 years ago.
Oh.
No. those of you who don't, I know Mike usually cackles.
Yeah.
Strangely for no reason. But
that's my opening act.
But, the Girthy Girdle twins.
Yeah, from the Jersey City Joker.
Yeah, we had the Jersey City Joker. We had the Girthy Girdle twins. I don't really. Those are the two that I remember. Yeah. The Jersey City Joker was
my character.
Yes.
I'm trying to think back. Nothing's coming to mind. No. The Girdle twins are great, though.
Why don't you explain for the new listeners who the Girthy Girdle twins were?
Well, we had Captain Bayonne on the show, and he's known for running around the city of Bayonne. He always has, like, this wrestler mask on and
amongst other things.
Cape, and he's kind of known as, like, a local superhero or whatever. So Scott told me to come up with a bit where I was his arch enemy, the Jersey City Joker.
And you gave Jersey City Joker a whole squad.
Yeah. I forget the name.
Like a posse.
It's kind of like the Sinister Six, but really, really worse. And I listed out a bunch of names, and one of them was the Girthy Girdle twins, who basically, they're so fat that when they release their girdle, it will snap around and cut off Captain Bayonne's head. I don't know how they came across that super villain power, but you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to get range stuff.
We've had a lot of weird things on the show. I always wonder, like, you know, I always say this all the time, like when I'm old and whatnot, I'm like, go back and listen to some of these things. You know, like some of the stuff that's probably been like said on the show, I probably completely forgot about half of it. But you know.
Well, like Aisha Ash reminded us that these broads need to get jobs, and we both looked at each other like, when was that?
Yeah, when did we say that?
That was like 200 episodes ago. Wow. Oh, well, 150 or something like that.
Hello, Podbean family. You're aware of the site being down. Stupid Podbean.
Yeah, it said this site can't be reached.
Yeah, I just checked their Twitter. They're saying that they're down. Losers. But anyway, did you get all your Black Friday shopping done?
I didn't do any this year. I had an interesting Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Originally, it was just going to be... Izzy was going to work, and I was going to go to, like, a Chinese buffet or something like that for Thanksgiving. So she got the word from the family that they were going out with the child to another family, so she only worked to one. So we went down to Lincroft, Jersey, to a friend of hers, Sharon, to have Thanksgiving dinner with her. Yeah, it was a fun night and whatever. Their son, it's kind of funny, he kind of lives with them right now, and he kind of annoys them at times, and it was a funny time and all where the father of the family had to basically scream, and God damn it, stop changing the channels, just keep on football, for God's sake. So he had, like, National Geographic on or something, it was like reruns of Mama's Family was on.
All the classics.
Yeah,
all the classics.
Everybody just looking at each other. It came to him coming into the room. She's like, God damn, put on football. So we took off at around 7:30, and traffic was absolutely wonderful in New Jersey.
Like it's always.
Right? Yeah. So simply put, the fun year that I have had and my girlfriend Isabel has had. I've been laid off of two jobs this year, but Isabel took the lead because we had our third car accident.
No.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus.
Third time somebody rear-ended into her vehicle, not of our fault.
This is your car or her car?
Her car.
The new one.
The new one that she loves, that she names
after. The second new one.
Yeah. This is the one that she loves, she names after... Sophia, the Golden Girls, and she's, okay. Yeah, she's huge about Golden Girls, so her car is Sophia, and then she told a friend, well, your car is Blanche, and her friend's like, my car's not a slut, it's not Blanche.
I like how she's trying to, like, push her weird Golden Girls, like, love on other people. They're probably like, no, we're not the Golden Girls, we're not getting together with our cars and having quirky old people conversations.
Well, there's some people that actually get into it, like, one of her friend's husbands talked about there was a Golden Girls coloring book, and then sure enough, 1 week later, something came in the mail that Izzy ordered.
Oh, God.
I love coloring my Golden Girls.
A lot of peach being used. Mm-hmm. A lot of peach. So you got hit from behind?
Yep. We were on the Garden State Parkway. We were going over the bridge to exit 127 to get onto 287. Traffic stopped in front of us. I checked up. Person behind me apparently chose not to and slammed into her car.
So you were driving?
I was driving this time.
How bad's the car? Well, first off, I assume everyone's okay.
Yeah, everybody's fine. Our car is decent. I mean, well, it's good. It's good. Yeah. It's basically the bottom bumper is pushed in. Everything else about it drives fine and everything like that, but I kind of felt bad for the other girl because, like, when I went up to her, she's like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. This is my first accident. And
you punched her.
Well, yeah, I mean, welcome to New Jersey.
Yeah.
Give thanks for this. And her car took the most of the damage. I kind of felt bad for her. Like, at first, I thought she busted her radiator because just, like, liquid was pouring out of her car. And I went up to her. I'm like, turn off your engine.
Right.
Because I was worried about that. And so we had to wait for an hour for a cop to come by because he pretty much said his whole night is, he's like, I got three more right after you guys. So
probably just loads of accidents.
Oh, yeah.
The car was drivable out of the situation.
Both were drivable. I mean, it's going to go through insurance. I mean, it's on their side. It's just one of those, it's like, I mean, when you're calming down the girlfriend, at the same time in the back of your head, you're going, yeah, this is pretty shitty luck here.
Three in 1 year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, first it was Tap House 15.
Yep.
When we came out, they're like, what was your car again? Oh, you mind if I go grab somebody?
Yeah. That was bad.
Second one was the one where it was really bad, was and bad we lucked out. Everything was all right with Izzy. I mean, obviously, she's still going through herself a chiropractor and stuff like that, you know, because she has soreness and all that fun stuff. And then this lovely encounter.
Well, I guess they say things come in threes, right?
Well, I just told you.
Not usually car accidents, though.
Yeah, yeah, I told you I got laid off twice this year. I really don't want to push it.
I have an announcement. I got one.
Well, I can understand cutbacks for this show.
Melissa Allen is my new co-host. We're rebranding. It's this new show where I just call her awful names for an hour.
Mm-hmm. Oddly, I fit with your opinion, nope. And I will walk away from the show on that, just to listen to that.
Well, that's a bummer.
Yeah.
That's a bummer. All right, Mike, I think it's time to get our guest on the show here.
Oh, cool.
It's guest time. We got a guest.
I thought we were going back and forth on that.
No, I was handing it off. I was lobbing it to you.
Well, I rejected it.
But if you know the game of baseball, if you're a Met fan, especially a Red Sox fan, mm-hmm. you're going to really like this guest coming up.
Nobody knows if there's Anaheim fans out there.
Jason Bay. No. But the one and only Mo Vaughn is joining us.
Very cool.
I just remember Mo being like a masher in the 90s, one of those guys that just like stood at the plate and you're like, oh my God,
like no matter how good of a pitcher you are, you just look over on the on deck circle and be like, oh crap,
just big and strong. Mm-hmm. And like the weird thing for him is his career average is .293, which you do not see anymore, like home run guys with averages high like that. Right. Like we were just saying before, it's like a lot of home run guys are now like .240, .250. Like, Judge had a good year. Like,
well, that's why you even see, like, those guys who used to be home run hitters, like, in their mid-30s, late 30s. they'll be in a minor league team hitting 192 just because teams are just so desperate. Ah, if you can hit a home run, who cares?
Yeah. But, yeah, so Mo Vaughn is joining. He's got what's interesting about him, he's not only really successful at baseball. He was even in the Hall of Fame ballot one year. But he is immensely successful in, like, business. So I actually contacted him through his MVP Collections, which is his clothing brand. That's how I got in touch with him. And without further ado.
How many shirts can you fit into? Okay.
Well, that's how I got him on. They made me buy 15 shirts.
Yeah. Listen, do you do alterations?
Well, I mean, I sometimes need, like, length on shirts and stuff. I'm sure you go through the same thing, too.
Yeah, I don't have many shirts where I can't fit into. It's the length thing that always kills me.
Yeah, in more than one way. Mm. Oh, bing, boom. The length thing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, without further ado, the one and only Mo Vaughn.
Let's do it.
Hello.
Hey, it's Mo.
Mo Vaughn, what is up? It is Scott Brennan and Mike Berlew here. Thanks for giving us a few minutes, man.
Man, thanks a lot. How you guys doing?
We're doing good, man. We were just
doing well.
We were just talking about kind of how we remember you as a player.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm a Met fan, so I remember you coming to the Mets in, 2002? Now, Mo, where are you calling us from? Are you on the East Coast? Are you...
I'm in Boca Raton, Florida.
Oh, nice.
Oh, nice.
Now, Mo, you, I know you're very successful off the field. You have your hands in a lot of different things. Recently, I heard you talking about your MVP collection, which we'll get to in a little bit. But were you like a baseball player your whole childhood, or did you kind of find that later? Towards high school, towards college, or did you grow up around the game?
I played all sports. You know, I played football, basketball, and baseball. I really never concentrated on one. With the high school, played three, and then when I got to things, talking about college with my dad, that was the direction we were going to go in. So that's how we got to Seton Hall University, and everything just took off from there. But I knew, I was pretty good at all three. I knew once I focused on one, that I could be, really make a leap. Did I know I was going to be a pro? Of course not. But I knew, you start concentrating all year round on playing one sport, you got a chance to do some things.
Now, what were you the other two? Football and...
I played football and basketball. Oh, right. Listen, I didn't think that's... It kills me today, you see all these, these leagues and these kids playing, 60 games a season in baseball. And
yep.
Coaches telling them not to play other sports. I just think that's wrong. I think you should just play everything. I think it makes you, a better athlete all the way around. And, you don't get burned out. So my son, he's going to play everything, and that's just the way that's going to be.
Yeah, I coach high school soccer, and I always say there's a couple kids that are, totally, absolutely gifted in soccer and should play, but I love, filling out my team with multi-sport athletes. I always find, basketball players can move a little better, and they adapt to different positions better, so I completely agree with you.
1,000%. I think it's necessary. I was reading something... I was listening to something on the news where sports scientists were talking about how kids are playing one sport and blowing out their knees at an early age because their knee is only going in, it's stressed in one certain direction. If you're a multi-sport athlete, you're moving around in all different directions, and I think it helps you build, stronger legs doing different things, especially when you're young. It was a sports scientist out of Boston, Massachusetts, now that I think about it, and they were just talking how, young kids were blowing out their knees just playing one sport, which is crazy.
All right.
And you were in college for pretty much the entire length of, 3 or 4 years. We see a lot of these kids trying to get into teams out of high school. What made you not only go into college, but stay in the college and wait it out before going into the majors?
Well, my mom, you know, I got drafted in the third round of the Phillies by the Phillies. My dad and I went home. My mom was like, my mom told the scout he's going to college. She didn't even ask us, you know, what we wanted to do. So I think that's how I got to school. But, you know, I remember when, you know, when that happened, you know, you figure a good college program is just as good as going to the minors, mm-hmm. maybe even better. I mean, you look at, you know, the cat from Houston coming out of Connecticut.
Yep.
You know, going, you know, Northeast school, you know, look at Biggio. Craig Biggio just went to the Hall of Fame, Seton Hall University, Northeast school. So I think, you know, getting on the road that early in life, I think is difficult. I adapted to college because I went to boarding school and, you know, I was a little bit more mature being on my own at an early age. But I don't think people need to be so quick to get out there so fast. You know, it's tough. My minor league baseball is a tough life, especially, you know, no single and double A. It's a tough life. You got to be ready for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because I look at your early career just stat-wise. And you look at, like, your first couple years in Boston and your average is 260, 230. And then all of a sudden, you're hitting close to 300 for almost 8 years straight, something like that, which is something I feel like you don't see in the game as much. You know, like, you don't think of big home run hitters as being able to hit for average. Was that a big stress back then? Whereas you see it now, batting average, it seems like managers and statisticians don't really even focus that much on average. It's all home runs and production. Whereas you had best of both worlds here. Like, the one year you hit 310 and, you know, in 1 year you had 39 home runs. When you had 44 home runs hitting 300, 326, that's ridiculous.
I couldn't live with hitting 250.
Right.
Now, today, ever. Just I just don't, you know, I can't, I don't, because, I mean, that, you know, my batting coach, Mike, used to, you know, we talk about to this day, you know, 250, that means you're making outs two, you know, out of every 10 at bats, you're making 8 outs. It's just hard for me to fathom.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, listen, I didn't really have to worry about power. I was a bigger guy, but I damn sure wanted to make sure that I hit the ball in all fields and was a hitter. I mean, it's just, that's, you know, I struck out a lot, you know, I struck out a lot. And, you know, I probably, if I even cut my swing down at the time, I would have hit even higher. But me, I can't, that 250, 260, 270 just does not ring well for me. I think you got to be all around and hit for power and hit for average. And I think that's when you become a better player all around.
Now, I wanted to just piggyback that. When you were in, like, the 90s, the 95, 96, where you're having these ridiculous years, did you start seeing, like, the money ball thing starting to come into baseball? Or were you guys just completely not really aware of that and just doing your thing? Or did you start hearing them preaching walks all the time and just all these different stats, OBS and OPS?
Man.
Or did you just play?
Our guys were old school.
Yep.
I was hitting third, fourth, and fifth.
Mm-hmm.
And our bad coach is like, when you get in the box, you are in scoring position.
That's it.
And that's the bottom line. I don't know how these other things go. You know, with, you know, listen, I look at all these stats and I you know, and they're a part of the game.
Right.
But ultimately it's getting the guy who's ready to compete, who's got a big heart, wants to go out there and compete every day. And that's what you need on baseball teams is tough-minded people that come to play every day and make it happen. You know, if, you know, you got a good eye, listen, you know, you want to pick the ball up, you want to, you know, see, you know, hit good pitches. But ultimately, listen, I don't need a statistician to tell me that. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. it's just about going out there and playing the game the right way. And that's what I try to do.
Now, everybody says the hardest thing in any sport is hitting a baseball. I'm kind of wondering, when you made it up to the major leagues, did you have a moment where some guy, like, threw a pitch, or maybe in spring training where you're like, holy crap, what the hell was that? Or just something where you just said, okay, I'm in the majors now.
Oh, man, listen. When you get to the majors, it's, that's that. I think, you know, they say, you know, football, you know, college football to pro football is a jump. They say that, you know, college basketball to the NBA is a jump. But to me, there's no bigger jump from AAA to the big leagues. Mm-hmm. Because as you see in the playoffs this year, and I'll explain it, American League, we play in smaller parks for the National League.
Right.
Okay, so the game is pitched backwards, meaning when you are 2-0 in the American League, you're going to get a slider or a curveball or a changeup. And then the opposite is going to be when you're ahead of the count, you're going to get a fastball. And you saw how in that World Series, how those American League pitchers were throwing that slider 9-10 times in a row for strikes, and strikes that looked like strikes because they got a pitch. You know, in the National League, there's bigger ballparks. So you 2-0, you can sit out there over the plate, and they throw that 2-0 fastball away, and you pop it up to left center. When you're playing in Yankee Stadium, Fenway Park, mm-hmm. you know, Oriole Park, Camden Yards, you got a pitch. And I think that's what when I got to the big leagues, man, 2-0, you were getting that nasty breaking ball, 3-2 breaking ball. And that's the difference. That's what makes the pitchers get to the big leagues. And the guys that can't hit that are the ones that stay in the minor leagues. And the guys that can't throw it are the ones that stay in the minor leagues also. And that's the difference of the game right there, you know?
What pitcher gave you absolute fits? Who was the guy that drove you crazy?
Listen, I tend to... When I went back to Boston, Pedro, I thought, was just the nastiest that I had ever seen, because he was just had, you know... He had the miles per hour, the curveball, the strike zone that was dead. I mean, he had 3 out pitches. I thought he was a, but then there was guys like, you know, remember Tony Foster's from Seattle? I couldn't hit him to save my life. I couldn't hit Dan Plesac to save my life. There was just some lefties I just could not hit. But I always, you know, I think I had some pretty good average against the better pitchers. I mean, damn it, you better be on your game or you're gonna be freaking sitting down. You know, if you don't get up against the good guys. But, you know, it was just some of those guys, man. I just, I remember when Frank Tanana was pitching, when I first came up, he was pitching with Detroit, and he was throwing like 88 miles an hour, and I couldn't hit him either. It's just those type of people, you know, they... Some people have your number, you know what I mean?
Now let me ask you, when you know this is a guy you struggle again, how hard is it to, like, approach the plate for the third time in a game and kind of put the last 2 at-bats away? And then on the opposite side of that, who was a pitcher that you loved feasting on, someone that was right in your wheelhouse?
Well, in terms of, listen, you know, you're hitting third in Boston, you're facing every tough lefty every night.
Yep.
You know, that comes out of the bullpen late in the game. You're just in that situation. I remember Mark Langston was another guy. And, you know, Chuck Finley, those guys with those nasty lefties that overhand with power. You just knew this, you know, it's going to be a battle today. You know, you hope you can get something done. But, you know, you're never looking back at what happened in the past, because, you know, by the time you're thinking back, what happened, it's 3 strikes and you're out. And you got to be going forward. But I think the guy that I hit the best, and only because he wasn't scared to pitch, was David Wells.
Oh yeah, nice.
You know, we used to tip our caps to each other each game, and we used to go at it. And I think that I hit him because he didn't run. He pitched, and you know we went at it. We used to laugh at each other, you know throughout the whole game, you know, about that part of the competition. But I love facing him because. He'll come right at you.
Tell us about the whole Yankees Red Sox rivalry. Did all you guys get into it? Was it just a thing where you're like, okay, a week from now we're going to be playing the Yankees, or is it more like the fans who hate each other?
I think it became a rivalry when the Sox have won, you know, four world championships and they were able to come back 3-0. And I think that's when it becomes a rivalry. When I was playing, it wasn't a rivalry. I played against those teams in the 90s and it wasn't close. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I think for me personally, I just knew that the lights were bright in New York City. And I always wanted to play well when I got to Yankee Stadium, and I did. And I just, I could be 0-for-40 and step in the Yankee Stadium and it would just click for me. I don't know if it was because I was home, close to college or whatever it was. But I think the Yankee, you know, for me personally, the Yankee rivalry made me a better player. There's no doubt about it. And just, it's just, but I think now, you know, now when, you know, you got some Yankees win the East, you got the Sox win the East. Mm-hmm. It's a rivalry now. You know, when I played, you know, we weren't up to the task. And this whole thing about Yankee, Red Sox, curse, Yankees, you know, Sox won when they were the better team. And then, you know, I always say, you know, the best thing about, you know, being a Yankee player, I should tell them, guys, you guys are so lucky, man. I should tell Derek Jeter all the time, you're so lucky because when your ownership wants to win, it makes it
mm-hmm.
it makes it easier.
Yep.
You know, I was playing, I was playing for John Harrington, you know, up in Boston, and, you know, it just they were just filling seats. Now they got John Henry. This guy wants to win, and they're in it. So that's what it's about.
Now, we had we had Lenny Dykstra on the podcast, and that was a fun episode to begin with. But one of the biggest things we were talking about was the changes in the game, and he would talk about how friendly the guys are now, like before games and chumming around, and how. He was very passionate about how much the game has changed, and he almost seemed like he kind of had disdain for the game now. And do you see like a lot of changes in the game that bother you, or you just think it's kind of the evolving of the sport?
Listen, Nails talked to people too. He had his friends. Listen, I think when you get out of the game sometimes.
Yep.
You look back at what happened and you get angry.
Mm-hmm.
I got friends on the team. Frank Thomas was my best friend. We talked for before the game. But when, you know, we got into a brawl and you see I went at him just like I would go at anybody else.
Yeah.
And today he's still angry at me for it. Today he gets on my ass about that today. But hey, man, you already got a different jersey on. That's what it is.
Dude, I would never want to see you and Frank Thomas angry together in the same stadium. Never mind, like going after each other.
Me and Cecil Fielder are close, man. And we had a brawl and we ran into each other. It's just what happens. I think the only difference in this is that when I came up, 24 man roster, you had 22 veterans and 2 rookies. Whereas today. Mm-hmm. The game has changed where there's more younger guys than older guys. And that's when you get, the crazy annex. But so what, man? It is what it is. I love these guys. These guys are awesome. You know, these guys, to come out slugging and Aaron Judge and, the kid out in center field for L.A.'s, the kid in Washington. These boys can play. And it's great to see. I think it's great for the game, but listen, don't let us older guys, shine on the game now, salt on the game between the players now. These guys are great players. Things change, people change, and we got to change with them.
Now, 95 obviously was an amazing year for you, winning the MVP, having crazy numbers, the team going to the playoffs. Was there anything that you did differently 94 into 95 that caused that, or is it just
even 96? Look at those numbers in 96.
Man, 94, let me tell you something. Realized in 94, I was probably hitting in 320s. I had 26 bombs, 82 RBIs, and we went on strike.
Ah.
At the break.
I didn't realize that.
At the All-Star break.
That's true.
So I look at that year like a loss, not a loss year, but that would have been another one I could have, really had some devastating stuff. Nah, it's just, I tell you one thing, and I'm sure other MVPs will tell you, when you win an MVP, it changes your your confidence level, and you know what you are, and it's verified, and you tend to walk through the plate with much. The game slows down, you slow down. You got a little bit of a credential that gives you, you know, just that little bit of know-how and edge that other people don't have. Mm-hmm. And I went out there in 96, and man, I had a great best. I had 96, I had 340 something.
326, 143 RBIs? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. I was, you know, I was really going, you know, 96, 97. I was, once you get that MVP, I think it kind of like gives you a little bit of validation. And it gives you a whole lot of confidence.
You know what put you over the hump in 95? These 11 stolen bases. Where did that come from?
Man, I was running. And then Jose got hurt. And they shut me down. I could have had 20. I'm still mad at Jimmy Williams about that. He goes to me, there's no more running. I said, oh, my God. Jesus, yeah. Jose.
I just feel bad for that second baseman, you know, is just sitting there in a base seeing you chucking at.
Yeah, it's like, man, what? He's running. I said, yeah, I'm running. Let's go. Then they shut me down.
Now, Mo, you had a very good career. You've been in nominations for the Hall of Fame. Is there something that you regret or you wish that you could have got done in your career?
Listen, I had a bad injury. I fell in that dugout. Nobody even knows. I fell in that dugout in 1999 when I went over to L.A. And basically 5 years later, I landed on my ankle in a way that, and it was my left ankle, which, you know, if you know about my stance, I'm really a back foot hitter.
Mm-hmm.
This ankle still hurts to this day sometimes.
You heard it in the dugout?
I could tell when the rain's coming. But I never could sit back on my back leg. I tried to play through that. I wound up blowing my left bicep off, you know, that year. And I just never was the same. The only thing I could say is, you know, I just wish that I had given L.A. everything that I had, but I was hurt. But besides that, you know, to go to the Hall of Fame, you need longevity. I mean, you look at all Bagwell, guys I came into the league with, you know, I was drafted in that same, you know, it was Bagwell, myself, Frank Thomas, Tim Salmon, Chuck Knoblauch. We were all in the same, you know, same crew. But, you know, you need time. And just, that's all you ask for is time. But that's all you can regret is that.
All right. Now, I'd be remiss as a Met, you know, I'm a diehard Met fan, and you were saying, you know, the lights are always bright in New York City. Were you, tell us about your time in New York. Did you enjoy your time in the city, or?
I don't know. First, you know, I'm from Rawl, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
I get a chance to come back to New York. I'm, you know, 20 minutes from my college, 30 minutes from my hometown.
Yep.
I mean, who wants to end their career the way they ended it? You know what I mean? And then for me, you know, I get up my first at bat in Shea Stadium. I hit my 300th home run. My next at bat, I get drilled in the hand. I'm out for 6 weeks.
Yep. Yep.
So it's like it just seemed like it never really ever got going for me when I was in New York. And I apologize to all, you know, Mets fans alike. It just never really got going. But I guess those, you know, listening, I catapulted, you know, playing with the Mets. I got out, you know, listen, I think the biggest thing in life athletes have to realize is you got to know when to go. I hurt my knee in Milwaukee, and I knew walking away from the clubhouse that day that I wasn't going to come back. And you got to move to the next thing.
Right.
I moved off, and, you know, I started, you know, my real estate company, which is blown up, you know. So things happen, you know what I mean? I don't know why, you know, some things happen, but I have no regrets. I just wish I could have fulfilled, you know, I left a lot of things unfinished in terms of what I could have done as a player, but injuries happen. What can you do?
Yeah.
Who had the worst media, Boston or New York?
I think Boston is the worst, and I'm going to tell you why. The one thing good about New York is New Yorkers don't care. New York, you could have a nose ring. You could have blonde hair. You could have whatever. They just want you to win. They don't give a damn. And I think I played in the 90s in Boston, I think. And by the time I got there, I think the whole entire city was just fed up. It hadn't won. And I think it was very tough because now, and I said, unlike most cities, the Boston reporters were like real, like fans. It's this one thing about, you know, my father, my grandfather passed the tickets down to me, and I'm gonna give them to my son, and we're gonna go to film. It's like, and I think they just took everything personally and dissected everything on a personal level. Which I had no problem with it. They could say what they ever want to say about me. Look at my numbers when I was there.
Right.
No one could do anything. But I just think you got two teams in New York, you got one team in Boston who hadn't won at that time, and it had to have been the toughest place.
Now, when you were in Boston, did you ever deal with any racial issues or anything that like we hear occasionally popping out of Boston, especially in the 90s?
Listen, you know, did I get hate mail? Of course I did. Who does it? But did I ever hear anything at the stadium? No, I'm at first base.
Yep.
What are you going to yell? And I think all in all, for me, the entire greater Boston area was great to me. Mm-hmm. Do I think they have some issues? Of course they do, like anybody else does.
Right.
Well, for me personally, it was a great experience. They treated me well.
Great. Now, you mentioned your real estate company. You have almost, it seems, from what we read about you, and I heard you on Joe and Evan a couple of times, and it seems like you've always kind of had your hands in some different things off the field, and whether it was not just businesses, but like extensive charity work and things like that. Was this a mindset that you had all through? Like, did you plan for your retirement and things after baseball, or did this just kind of come to you?
I think it kind of came to me. Listen, I had, you know, I you know, the when I was in Boston, I started in AAA, and this guy by the name of Bill Wallace, man, he was a great guy. We did a lot of public service work. You know, I went into the Hall of Fame up there in Pawtucket. And, you know, I didn't even remember. And I think what happens is you find these relationships with people, and they get to know you. Then they put you in things that work for you. I think for me, when I got to Boston, I worked with the Red Sox front office very well. I did some things, you know, I did homers for homeless for all my years. I think, I don't know how much I gave every homer to the homeless. But I think, you know, when I got involved, you know, I had mobile development, you know, a youth development program. When I got involved with the city, I just, you know, listen, my parents were teachers. You know, you extend a hand when you can. I think I've always done that. I've never, you know, listen, if you made me, like, you know, name the things that I've done, I probably couldn't do it because I just wasn't doing it for any reason above the fact that, all right, here's somebody in need.
Right.
If you can help them, help them. And it's worked out. So you always, always trying to lend a helping hand when you can.
It's kind of refreshing to hear somebody go through a full career and they have their own businesses and stuff.
That's what I was thinking. All you hear is...
You always hear the horror stories. I mean, what's your thoughts on... I'm not sure if you had other teammates that fall in their luck, or what's your thoughts on why so many athletes get in that position where they have all that money and then 10 years after the career, they're like doing menial jobs?
Because I think it's a trust issue. And I was very lucky to find a guy, a cat by the name of Gene Schnur. You know, he's, you know, we're managing partners. I'm in New York. And he was trustworthy, man. You know, I brought him, you know, I was the one that had the idea to start the whole affordable housing, you know, firm. This thing started in 2003. We've grown it to 14,000 units across the country. You know, a full platform, probably done $1 billion in construction. But I got a guy that was trustworthy, and you all know, you know, in your everyday life, how many actually good people are there out there in this world? Not many.
Mm-hmm.
So when guys make the decisions, it's not that they're, you know, not being smart. They just get in bed with the wrong crew, and before you know it, you know, these things happen, and it's a real shame. But, man, the man upstairs has taken care of me. Because I got a guy, you know, and my other partner, you know, Rob Bennett, these are trustworthy guys, and we started something. You know, they're my partners, you know, and Ami, they're my partners, and MVP. You know, when we go into other, we're going to be partners forever. So it's just, that's what it is. I was very, very lucky to find guys that were trustworthy. And I think they're some of the smartest guys in the room whenever we're around.
Now, tell us about MVP. I'm actually looking on the website. It's 20% off on your first order and whatnot. But I heard like a little, you talking about it a little bit. And it's an MVP collectibles clothing company. Where did you come up with this? Have you always been interested in clothing? Or was this just something that came to you recently?
Here's how this whole thing happened. I'm actually a 2X tall, which you cannot find one in any regular store in the country.
Right.
But for me, I was able, you know, with my income and afterlife, I could get my stuff made. Right. You know what I mean? I could, you know, but, you know, I could get, but I basically, you know, I was either going to be in a suit or I'm going to be in jeans. There was no lifestyle, no intermediate look, no nothing solid enough that I could take, you know, business casual. And I've always been thinking about this, and what MVP has brought is a business casual look to the big and tall guy. And now, you know, we're out there and we're premium. We got premium denim. We are, you know, we got the fashion. We got the entire gamut. And I think it just started because that size, 2XT, 3X, 4, there was nothing there. It's like they gave us the worst of the worst, you know, materials, the worst patterns, the worst colors, the worst clothing. And I started it, and it's been great. You know, we're fast fashion. We're creating a lifestyle look. You know, we're in 50 DXL stores across the country. We're overseas, UK and Debenhams. We're working on a Latino market. We're online at MVPcollections.com. You can go online and check out the stuff and buy it. But this is a fashion brand for big and tall. And we're able, and I think the biggest thing about us is that we're made in USA. We source all of our stuff out of California. And with that, I can change my style 6 times a year versus overseas, you know, with, you know, the lead haul, you know, the lead time of 6 to 8 months, mm-hmm. I'm able to change my fashion, man, and, you know, 6 times a year.
You're looking good, Mo. You're looking good, man.
You know what I mean? So it's just that thing, you know, and my aspirations are to become, you know, we're a global brand. That's what we're trying to do.
I mean, it's got to be, like, I wanted to ask you, it's got to be pretty awesome to succeed in multiple things and have, I'm assuming after you're successful in what it is, whatever it's housing or clothing, you just get more confidence to try new things, which is great. I want to ask you, do you try to preach this message to your son, who I know you have a son who is in the minor league still, I believe, right?
No, I don't have a son. My son's young. I got a daughter though, 13.
Oh, never mind.
You're talking about Corey Vaughn?
Yeah, Corey Vaughn.
Oh, yeah, that's his cousin's
son.
That's
Greg's son.
Yeah. Oh, that's Greg's son.
All right, so daughter, cousins, whatever. It's got to be, do you try to tell them that, like, you know, a career is ending, you know, it can end so quick, and but you are able to kind of diversify yourself so much. That's got to be a great message to hear from you, that you're not just Mo Vaughn, the baseball player. Like, you got to be an athlete, you got to succeed. You have like a million different things going on, and you seem like you're successful in a lot of them.
Listen, my daughter is a pretty good tennis player. She plays down here at an academy. That's how I got down to Boca. But guys, you know, I tell her all the time, you know, I already have my day. And my day is good. And I'm happy and proud about it. But you got to make your own way. And just because your last name is Vaughn doesn't mean you're going to make it. You know what I mean? And make sure you're doing this for yourself, because I'm going to love you no matter what you do. And it's just, you know, listen, being an athlete is tough. It's not easy. It's very, very hard. You need to be talented. You need to be quick, fast, all those different, determined, and you need a lot of luck too.
Right.
So it's just one of those things that's tough. So I just try to listen. Let me tell you, everything hasn't been good. Listen, I made some mistakes in business too.
Right.
You know, you just haven't read about them. But you know, it's you know, and I what I mean by that is that, you know, I think as I get older, you got to look at things that people need. Doesn't mean it's always going to work, but the one thing you got to do is you got to put your heart and soul in it. You know, and I built Omni from the ground up. I'm my first employee, so now 800 employees. We started MVP Collections ground up, and we're going to grow it from there. So I do have a lot. I try to teach my son and my daughter the essence of what it takes to be successful, whether it be on the field, on the court, and definitely in the classroom, and you know when you're trying to get through life. So I try to definitely give them those experiences.
With you being out of the game for a while now, does that competitive edge ever leave you, or are you like watching Never. Games on TV saying, man, I could smack that Verlander guy, man. I'll hit it out of
the No, 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 no. Listen, my competitive edge never leaves. I watch the games, and you know, I manage the games as I'm watching it. But I know where I'm supposed to be, right here sitting on the couch. That's where we're supposed to be. And I think, you know, I was talking to a friend the other day, and we were talking about how many guys throw 100 miles an hour versus when we play. I think there was one guy that threw 100 miles an hour when we played. Now there's 25 guys, which is unbelievable. So we're right where we need to be, you know, checking it out and just having a good time watching it.
Would you like to play first base for the Verbal Shenanigans softball team? There's a spot open.
No.
We got Lenny in center field.
Yeah, I got too many injuries, man. I try to kick a cut and rip everything, every ab muscle I have out of it. I'll be in backing traction. Jesus Christ.
Mo, thanks so much for giving us some time, man. You're a really awesome guy. You got a lot of like insight and you're smart and funny. If people want to go check out like either your business or tweet at you, where can they go?
Listen, check me out. Go to MVPCollections.com and check me out there. That's the best way. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. All those handles will be on the Facebook and the MVPCollections.com page. But come check it out. Look at it. You know, I think one thing, you got to build your business off listening. Tell me what you think. Tell me what it is. Let me know how things are. Let me know what you see. Give me some ideas, and we'll go from there.
Mo, thank you so much, man, and good luck with everything.
All right, guys. Pleasure. Thanks again. Let me know if you want to talk again. Thanks.
Man, awesome.
Yeah, after I asked my first question, that was one more baseball question than I asked Lenny Dykstra.
We got a lot more inside baseball from Mo than Lenny.
Yeah, there wasn't a bunch of people on the streets yelling at him and stuff.
He wasn't scoring crack during the interview.
It was like a yin and a yang kind of deal, where the yang was, I'm not icky by this, you know?
He's a really awesome dude, man. Like, very, it seems to have his mind very clear about like his career. And it reminded me of Trent Dilfer a couple weeks ago. Very like knew his play. It's like Mo was like talking about how, you know, I'm sorry to the Met fan and the Angels. I wish I could have gave more. And you know, it's pretty interesting when like you sometimes think the athletes are like, well, I was great all the way through.
What are you talking about? My years in Cleveland were awesome, Trent Dilfer.
But what an awesome guest.
Absolutely.
I had Scotty's this weekend, hosting Scotty's both weekend, weekend day,
both
Friday.
Both weekends. Double weekend Thanksgiving. I like that.
It's a new American tradition.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And both shows are good. Small crowds, but both fun crowds. But it was funny, Saturday, Bob DiBono was featuring, and he does like a whole like Trump impression. Like it's a big part of his act. Like he puts on the hat and everything. He's pretty good. Apparently, he like... He was with like Kendrick Lamar or something the other day. Like,
yeah, he was. I forget what show he was on. He did. I think it was the after show, the one with
the nightly show. I think
the nightly show, the one that got unfortunately canceled a few months back.
But it's funny. We had this great family in the front row, like the front table, And like this old grandma, she was just like laughing all the time. And no, not like the Girdle twins or whatever. So she was great. She was being picked on. But then he goes into this whole Trump thing. And like at the end, you know, like we're shaking hands to everybody who came in. And she's like, it was great. But, you know, I don't like Donald Trump. So when you did that, I just stopped listening. And she's like, I just really didn't like that. And I'm just like,
Wait, she was mad because she doesn't like Trump and he was making jokes
about Trump? Donald Trump.
That don't make sense.
Well, you know, Mike, everything is just... You got to be offended by something.
Remember that great act I had where I dressed up as Hitler and just made a bunch of jokes about that?
I was like, what is
wrong with you people? You all hate Hitler. You should be loving this.
You were still, you know, polishing that, though. You were a little rough around the edges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the Hanukkah celebration was not a good
night. And the shower scene was brutal.
Yeah. They're like, all right, we get it. You murdered people. Thank you.
But it got me thinking, like, you know, it's a comedy club, and all people are coming up to you and telling you that they're quote unquote offended by something. And this is an old lady; like, it's just so part of the culture. Like,
it's like
to be offended by something. Like, you have
lived through everything.
You live.
Why is this insulting? You
lived through Hitler.
Yeah,
literally. She was old.
Mm-hmm.
So it got me thinking. You guys, you know how
it's good when you think sometimes.
It's hard.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was thinking about people being offended. I wanted to talk about some of the things that this year that college kids got offended by.
Oh, good.
So the 10 – it was actually like last year going into this year.
Mm-hmm.
But first, I looked up the top 9 things that people were offended by. And this was actually 2015. I was going to play a little like what's the game with the board? Show me.
Oh, Family Feud?
Family Feud. So, Merlo – I want you to think of if you could think of anything that you think might be on this board.
2015?
Yeah, like 2015, 2016. What do you think was one of the big things that people were offended by?
2015.
Or reported the most? I'll give you a hint. It's something that you could be related to something that you like.
Philadelphia?
Well, no. Everybody's offended by that. Bo and Luke is your next hint.
Oh, the Confederate flag.
Confederate flag was number one. The Confederate flag. Remember that whole controversy?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's offended by the Confederate flag. Mm-hmm. You know, you were proudly wearing yours.
No, I was 8 at the time. That was, let's see, if I was 8, that was 1984. Come on now.
The glory days of racism.
Oh, man, I could tell you stories, man.
The next one was Caitlyn Jenner winning the Arthur Ashe Award. Everybody was very – the Courage Award. Remember that? That was a big – she won the big award after being a woman for a couple months or whatnot.
I have no feelings either way.
And then apparently number 3 was fast food workers making $15 an hour. That was a big – people were up in arms about that.
Really? Okay.
Same-sex marriage was legalized that year.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I was up in arms. Apparently, Kylie Jenner, I never even heard this, modeled in a wheelchair. People were offended by that.
Can we get some YouTube video of that?
Kylie Jenner modeling in a wheelchair. Oh, Christmas back then on the Starbucks cup was a big...
Wait, they had Christmas, or was that when they changed it over to, like,
remember the Starbucks holidays? Cup was, like, red and green and had, like, Christmas-looking decorations, and they're like, oh, my God.
Now it's just red.
Oh, my God. Like, it's just for Christmas. It's not including all of the other holidays and cultures.
Mm-hmm. Why are you smirking so much over
I'm just thinking, you know, how ridiculous people are.
Mm-hmm.
Mascot names. Mascot names. You're a Redskins.
Hail to the Redskins.
You think they're going
to... Big win over the Giants. Thanksgiving.
Exciting game.
Oh, yeah.
Exciting
that was a funny game. Thing. Like, when that accident happened, I'm like, oh, man, I'm missing the first half of the game. And kind of add to it as a bad feeling as Izzy was feeling, I had to turn the Sirius off from the Redskins game to Christmas carols to make her happy. And if anybody has listened to this show before, I am one person who is not a fan of any kind of Christmas carols.
Why is that, Mike?
Because my mom, glorious Emma Berlew, would play Christmas music 24 hours a day from the end of Halloween, not Thanksgiving, Halloween, until the week into New Year's. Nonstop. Anybody who ever made a song for Christmas, I heard from that blasted stereo that was about 8 feet tall with about speakers 10 feet tall all day long. Not a fan. So...
You think the Redskins are going to change their name ever? It seems like it's died down a little bit. I haven't heard much. Like it feels like whenever there's
Snyder's
like slow
pretty
news,
much holding on to it. The only way I could see it happening is basically the NFL saying, "You know what? We're going to pay for your trademark. We're going to pay for every ounce of merchandise you currently have, and we'll give you a certain amount of money for X amount of years to go into the new one. If you're going to scream that you're going to lose money on merchandise because." You know, you caved in, quote unquote, into a new name.
I feel like once one domino falls, then they got to go after like the Indians, the Braves. The Braves, I don't even understand.
Well, it's the tomahawk chop. That's the most racist thing they still do.
No, I'm sure a lot of things in Atlanta are more racist.
John Rocker?
More racist than the tomahawk chop. I'm just guessing.
I'm saying in the stadium specifically associated with the team.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was going to say also in the stadium is probably a lot of racist.
What happens in the parking lot is another story.
Who else? Indians, Braves. Seminoles, maybe. I don't know. But, yeah, so those are that was the list of the major things. But here are some of the ridiculous things college students from Campus Reform, I guess that's a website, 10 most ridiculous things college students and administrators were offended by.
All right.
Okay. Crucifix, All Lives Matter, reported as a hate incident at UWL. So a report from University of Wisconsin. Hate response team, bro. They have a hate response team. Like, you call them, like, I'm feeling hated on. Like, get down here. Revealed that students had filed formal complaints about everything from images of the crucifix to a blog post about life on campus as a white student. One student reported feeling unsafe upon seeing a campus crusade for Christ poster on campus, claiming that the cross represents oppression and hate of the LGBT community. In spite of a very active hate response team, UWL contends they care about free speech on campus.
I got pissed off at that poster with that cat hanging on by the clothesline. It's like, don't tell me to hang on. Shut up. You don't know how bad my life is.
I was offended by stupid the cat. Smokey the Bear telling me only I can prevent forest fires. Not only you prevent forest fires.
I got things to do. You're a talking bear. You should be smart enough to figure this out.
You're already in the woods.
Yeah.
Okay. So UNC, so North Carolina, claims Christmas vacations, golf outings are microaggressions.
I thought at first they were complaining about the National Lampoon's Christmas vacation.
Yeah, probably. There's something in there, probably. So to help their staff avoid microaggressions, Burlow.
Is that like a microbrew?
No. Nothing.
Those are refreshing.
The University of North Carolina posted a guide on their website urging family members to avoid phrases like husband or boyfriend, which is heteronormative, and Christmas vacation, which minimizes non-Christian spiritual beliefs.
So the same state that basically said, screw you transgenders, you're not going in our bathroom, also has this?
This is college, bro. Colleges are like...
I'm quite aware, but it's just would you make up your mind? What the...
Well, I feel like colleges are surrounded sometimes by like old racist people, but the colleges themselves are a bunch of whiny little babies on campus.
Well, to be truthful, if you look at any of the elections and when they do the map of the counties, you can, like, most of the states are mostly red.
Right.
But when you go into, like, the cities, that's when you get to the blue areas.
Yep. So further, staff should not invite other staff members on golf outings because it assumes that everyone has the financial resources / exposure to a fairly expensive and inaccessible sport.
How much is golf in North Carolina?
UNC.
I mean, I can get a bucket of balls for like $5.
UNC eventually removed the guide following Campus Reform's reporting the list, claiming that it was being misinterpreted as an official university policy.
So the misinterpretation was misinterpreted.
Bro, how dare you take a fellow employee to a golf outing? Can't do that. Oh, this is in Rutgers.
I needed a caddy.
Rutgers, right down the road. Ooh. About a half hour.
You are.
Rutgers avoiding someone is a microaggression. Avoiding someone. Students staying in the College Avenue apartments at Rutgers University were treated to a bulletin board guiding them on how to avoid dangerous microaggressions, such as the phrases, "That's so ghetto," and "illegal aliens." Flyers on the bulletin board linked to the school's Language Matters campaign, which claims that avoiding someone could be deemed a micro assault.
Oh. Yeah, pass. That's where I sit back and going, all right, shut up. You're insulted with a word.
I don't live in this world anymore. Yeah.
There are certain words you can sit back and go, okay, I can see you getting mad about this one. All right, it's coming out of my mouth. I totally understand the southern twang in this thing. Totally understand that, but
what about? I love that avoiding someone is a micro. So instead, you got to like deal with people that you don't want to deal with.
Well, that's why I'm still on the show. I put in a complaint when you kept on avoiding me. You know,
on the verbal shenanigans HR departments.
Why did we hire them again?
Pretty slow.
Yeah. They're outsourced out of India. It's really weird.
Okay. I mean, microaggressions. Just the word microaggression. If you said to me, Scott, we need to talk.
I have a microaggression on you.
Yeah, I would just be like, we're done, dude. let's just wrap this up and put it in a bow, and that's the end of it.
I didn't just say I got a beef with you. I don't go to microaggressions. Bro, you pissed me off. What kind of microaggression is that?
What are we doing? What are we raising?
It's... Sometimes when new words come up, we have to have like a vote to say, nope, get rid of it. Nope. Gone. Right.
Pro-life flyers were racist and vile at Purdue University.
Okay, do they understand the term racism?
Pro-life students at Purdue University were accused of being racist for anti-abortion flyers, drawing attention to the disproportionate abortion rate for black children versus white children. Hands up, don't abort, the Students for Life flyer read, co-opting the language of the Black Lives Matter movement. Black children are an endangered species.
All right, when you call a human being a species, right off the bat, you're pretty freaking racist.
Angry Purdue students and professors swarmed the pro-life group's Facebook page, calling them hypocritical, delusional, ignorant C-words, and suggesting they drink bleach.
Now, sadly, they actually said C-words instead of the real word.
I don't like to be vile.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't want to offend people. I'm mad as hell, but only to myself.
Well, I love that, like, they're so offended, but yet they'll go and use, like, ridiculous language back, you know, like, where that's, whatever. Staff member Jamie Newman even joined in the action, referring to the students as vile, racist idiots before threatening to rape pro-life women, which he defended as a joke.
I wouldn't use it as an opener. I gotta be honest. You gotta leave the rape jokes in the middle when you got a hot crowd. Yeah. You know, when you start with that rape joke, it's just like, oh, another one of these, huh?
Next one is my old alma mater, Ramapo College. Students at Ramapo College, well, an American-themed barbecue was considered offensive.
Do tell.
Students at Ramapo College were forced to change the theme of barbecue because an American theme was considered too offensive by administration. According to emails obtained by Campus Reform, the college Republicans and college Democrats intended to co-sponsor a residence hall barbecue to help students register to vote. But just 2 days before the event, the chief organizer was informed that the event could be considered offensive because of the militaristic depiction of Uncle Sam posters promoting the barbecue.
Well, Uncle Sam was the one that shot all the cows and brought us the meat.
Now,
I want you as spare ribs.
Now, for once, you have a group of the college Republicans and Democrats putting on something together.
That's a rarity.
To encourage kids to vote.
Yeah.
And somebody's offended by this. American barbecue.
How dare they use American when we're talking about the United States voting.
It's just so offensive. First of all, I don't even know what the course of action is if you're being offended. Like, if you're offended, what do? You whine about it and it makes it better?
I guess right off the bat, if you have to explain why you're offended and you're still like, wait a minute, say that again, If you need like four explanations to say why you're offended, you're not really offended. You're just pissed off over the smallest thing on the planet.
You remember Harambe, the monkey, the gorilla?
Oh, okay. Yep.
Well, in FSU, Florida State, Harambe costumes are cultural appropriation. In the second bulletin board featured on this list, a Florida State University residence hall asked students to avoid offensive costumes on Halloween, notably including Harambe, the late gorilla shot to death at the Cincinnati Zoo and later memorialized as a popular meme. According to display, Harambe, geisha, and Latinx alien, I don't know what that means. Costumes are all available examples of cultural appropriation and should be replaced by more sensitive costumes like animals or Steve Jobs.
Well, you know what offended me when I was at college? Donkey Kong. That's all monkeys throw barrels at plumbers. I see. Oh, they're horrible kidnappers who grab the girl.
They hate the Italians.
Yeah.
That's why. They hate the Italians.
Yeah. All monkeys climb ladders and make you go up there to save the girl. All monkeys have a Donkey Kong Jr. that has to save them. They're so stupid.
I don't know where we're going, man. I just don't know what to expect from kids. I guess every generation says this about the younger generation, but oh my God.
The funny thing is, if we throw it back to a former guest, the Geico caveman, remember how funny that was? Oh, that's offensive. And he slams the boom mic and all that. Mm-hmm. We actually became that.
Yeah. Last one here. Holiday evergreen trees were too religious for TWU. Texas Women's University.
There's somebody offended in Texas? Does that count?
No, there's a women's university in Texas?
I'm more confused than offended right now.
Even the word holiday is no longer a safe alternative for Christmas at Texas Women's University, which claimed that the term conates religious traditions and therefore is not inclusive enough for end-of-year office parties. TWU said employees should also avoid overtly Christmassy decorations such as Santa Claus, evergreen trees, and red-nosed reindeer.
Yeah, specifically red-nosed reindeers. Those guys are jerks. Showing off their that reindeer had a disability and they're exploiting it. How dare they?
When I was a kid, I remember we learned like all the different holidays from around the world, and like in the elementary school chorus, we had to sing like different songs from around the world. What is wrong with that? Like, what?
We sung the dreidel song along with the Christmas stuff. I don't think Kwanzaa was really big back then, but you know, we participated. We learned about stuff. I thought that was the point.
I thought if
somebody said Merry Christmas, it's like, oh, I'm Jewish. Oh, I'm sorry. Happy Hanukkah.
Yeah, or Mom, what's that tree? We don't celebrate. Oh, that's a tree for people who celebrate Christmas. This is what they do. Oh, okay. Thanks, Mom. Thanks, Dad. And that's it. Everybody wants to take all the onus off of them. Like, they don't have to be responsible for explaining things or teaching things. They just want everything customized to them and whatever they celebrate or like to do. Or if they're offended by something, everybody needs to be offended. So, you know.
I mean, I'm very mad nobody celebrates Cthulhu's birthday like I do in December.
That's like I remember when I was in college, we had to make like a PSA, like a commercial in one of my film classes.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I made fun of Ramapo because they were doing like – it was like Ramapo Diversity Day but handing everybody the same shirt. And I'm like, this is kind of weird. Like everybody's wearing the same exact shirts. It's Diversity Day.
That's why you wear flannel all the time, all the different colors on there.
But I don't know. That's that's the direction that our country is going into.
Good job, kiddies.
Meanwhile, you got slave trades going on in Libya. You got people being bombed and killed, and this is what we're worrying about here.
Yeah, but that's in different countries. I have bigger problems.
You ever think like a suicide bomber is like, oh man, I wish if only blah 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 didn't wear those reindeer horns. I wouldn't have done this.
Well, I get offended by suicide bombers, to be honest with you. Typical. You know, dynamite. You know, can't use the other explosives. No, can't be original. No.
Boom goes the dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, bro, I think that was a successful episode. I think it's time to wrap it up here.
All right.
Let's get out of here. What do you got?
We're ending it?
Yes, so unless you got something you want to talk about.
Well, no. I'll end it with my Facebook page, facebook.com/TheBurl721. I'm hoping in a week or so to start getting those Hallmark Christmas reviews up for everybody. We got some ideas, me and Izzy, maybe even make some food involved with the movies, you know, kind of do some different things, not just reviews. So go in there, and don't forget, tonight on The Walking Dead, it's been kind of growing. I've been getting some feedback as of late, so I'm happy with that. So facebook.com/theburrows721.
All right, and I want to promote the next Tap House show. I know it's about a month away.
That offends me.
December 28th, but I'm very happy to have the one and only Don Jameson headlining from That Metal Show. You may know him from That Metal Show with Jim Florentine and all the guys. So he's going to come headline with Joe Carney, KP Burke, and Mike Ciccoli on the show. So it's
hell
awesome.
Of a lineup.
Yeah. And those shows are always fun. So, again, it's going to be free. Same thing. So go check that out. Guys, what you can do is share the podcast. Listen, most importantly. Mm-hmm. Like the podcast. Leave a review on iTunes. That helps us. But really sharing it helps. Like, hey, Uncle Bob, like, I really like this. You remember Mo Vaughn? You know, from when we were kids, you took me to the game. Like, here, listen to this. And then
there's a very specific audience member.
Yes. But that those kind of things. And, again, go back to our page once Podbean gets it back up. And look at some of the guests we've had. We had Trent Dilfer on recently. Mm-hmm. Last week we had – who did we have last week?
Oh, what did we have last week? The Onion.
Scott Dickers from The Onion, one of the creators of The Onion. Matt Pinfield and guys from Coheed and Cambria. Mark Summers and Irony Singleton from The Walking Dead. So it's been a really awesome year, and we are booked all the way through the end of the year. Which was our goal for this year. So we made it, people. We made it. But with that, guys, life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Mo.
I don't get it.
She want Mo Vaughn.
Can we start over?
Bye, guys.